But for the most part, most of those people wanted desperately to be great, and they were embarrassed and they were ashamed, and nobody knew how to fix it. So when we began working in that space in the ED and really kind of bringing in all of the tactical strategies for how do you build culture, doing the patient rounding, doing the employee rounding, setting the performance expectations, helping people get to where they wanted to be. Within a year's time, that emergency department moved from the 0.4% to the 90th percentile in patient satisfaction and won awards. People were coming, market share changed, community image change. Now, can I tell you exactly how many dollars that meant?
Right, that whole dollar trail, it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't do direct dollar, but I would say without fail that the investment in improving that culture and creating that leadership structure and support was priceless. It was priceless.
Welcome to Culture Change RX, the podcast for healthcare professionals that are committed to creating a thriving workplace culture, improving the experiences of employees and patients, and ultimately unlocking their organization's next level of potential. I'm Sue Tetzloff, your host and co-founder of Capstone Leadership Solutions. Join me and my insightful guests each week as we share actionable insights for navigating the crucial people side of the business of healthcare. Subscribe now for a weekly dose of Culture Change RX. Now let's dive into this week's conversation where culture change takes center stage.
All right, welcome to the show, Charisse. We're so glad that you're able to share your wisdom and expertise and experience with the Culture Change RX podcast audience. Thank you and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Sue, and thank you so much for inviting me to participate. It's a real honor and always a pleasure to work with you. So I'm excited to share and exchange ideas today.
So glad to have you here. I want to have you just take a few moments to share with our audience a bit about yourself and your healthcare career.
Yeah, just hit a few of the highlights. I guess I'd start by saying that as a young person, I always wanted to be in healthcare. So I started as a dietitian and worked in my first hospital, was the director of food services and clinical dietetics. And I like to mention that because those first few years working in a hospital environment back in those days, delivering care with the other members of the team directly to the patient and really understanding care at the bedside, I think gave me extremely important grounding in leadership and knowing what leadership looked like when you are, you know, working at the entry level of the organization. Even though I was a clinician, I progressed from running the dietary department to be an assistant administrator and was responsible for all the ancillary departments. So housekeeping, laundry, supplies and delivery. I mean, that's really the ground floor.
Yes.
And at 32, I was the CEO of 28, ran a rural hospital and then became CEO for 18 years at a children's hospital and spent many years consulting and working in rural healthcare where, of course, the two of us met. So I've had leadership experiences mostly predominantly as the CEO all the way through and have loved every minute of it. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, our connection really is in the place of rural healthcare. I know it's a place where we have a lot of common passion and interest in helping small and rural healthcare organizations really thrive and serve their missions in their unique community environments with their unique challenges. So,
Absolutely. So
I just thought it'd be great to open with your context of your career, the different seats you've sat in different types of organizations. Can you share kind of in your own view how you term or describe your working definition of what is culture?
Well, you know, the term was used for many years early in my career by a lot of people in leadership, and I never personally, even as a leader, quite understood what it really meant. And I'd been a leader a long time before I decided to pursue my doctorate in leadership. And actually, I was a preceptor for the University of Minnesota for 10 years and helped many senior executives to become CEOs, and still didn't feel quite like I understood culture in the way I could. And when I started my doctorate degree, I stepped out of administration for a couple of years and spent 3 years with the University of St. Thomas and University of Sioux Falls in a combined program. And my leadership dissertation started surrounding the whole idea of leadership and servant leadership and what it meant and how to really transform or change organizations. So like deep change. And I look back on some of the old definitions. I want to just read a definition and then talk about what I think it meant in practical terms, because it took a long time to get the theory into concept. And I've seen that in many ways. So when I, you know, look at the definition, it says the culture traditionally is defined as the underlying beliefs, assumptions, values, and ways of interacting that contribute to the unique social and psychological environment of an organization. Well, try reading that to your colleagues and staff and see if they get it. I tend to describe it as the way people treat one another, mm-hmm. and the way you feel when you walk in an organization. You may not be able to use those words in that description, but you'll know what the organization feels like when you walk in by the way you're treated. If you're greeted at the front door, if people are happy, if people walk you to your destination, if they're helpful, how can I help you? How can I serve you? And you walk out of the door loving that organization, you're going to say, that felt so good. That is a great place to be. I will tell you, we've been at Mayo. This is not a, you know, commercial for them. And we were just there with some health journey issues with my husband. And when the people at the front door greet you that way, when you're walking down the hall, the director of laboratory services stops and says, you look lost. Can I help you find your way? You're thinking, well, aren't you busy? Don't you have to get to your department? You know, you could feel it. You walked away, or we walked away from that experience as one of many saying, wow. As compared to some places that I've worked in where people don't feel good about their work. They don't feel good about themselves. And it shows. And I'll leave this facility nameless, but one of the organizations that I started doing some interim work in, and I've done many interim CEO roles, so I won't name them, but, you know, walking in the front door was painful. And I finally asked the registration director, why won't anybody look at me or smile or greet me pleasantly when I come in the door? And she said very clearly, our CEO told us to keep our heads down and our mouth shut. Mm-hmm. Well, that took me aback. People weren't kind to each other. There were signs all over the building saying, don't do this, don't do that. You could feel it. So when I talk about culture, I talk about sort of very simply, like, how are we treating each other? And how does that permeate the organization and actually make you feel good about your work? When I come in and do excellent work and deliver excellent patient care and love each other and love the patients and really get great outcomes. So when people working in the organization have personal high self-esteem, they feel good about themselves, good about they're in the right place because this is the kind of work they want to do, about the mission, they want to take care of patients. That's culture at its best. And you can take that into more than healthcare. You can take it into dining. You can take it into Walmart. You can take it into retail shopping. So I think it works for me. So that's what I talk about when I say culture. It's about the norms and the way we treat each other.
When you say, you know, it can be felt, it can be sensed, it's palpable. That resonates with me so much, and probably many others that are listening to this, that, and to your point of the contrast of one organization where you'd been with your husband and you got that good positive sense that I came to the right place. They care about us, you know, even as strangers lost in their building, versus another place where they too gave a feeling or a sense, just not so positively. So speak to me a little bit more about how do you shape and influence culture? Just taking this quick break to let you know that the registration deadline is coming up soon for our Healthcare Executive Forum that is happening on June 12th and 13th, 2024 at Mission Point Resort on beautiful Mackinac Island here in Michigan. Join us for these 2 days of immersive learning, engaging discussions, and networking opportunities. Go to capstoneleadership.net. This year's topic is maximizing momentum with trust, teamwork, and time. Registration deadline is May 20th. Get your spot today, capstoneleadership.net.
Well, herein is the leadership challenge. So when you're the CEO and you have this gift of an organization that you have the privilege of serving, and you sense and you feel and you see that people aren't behaving the way you hope they would, and behavior is the key word, you begin to think about how can we change or improve behaviors. And that, and self-esteem, that is something you cannot dictate, direct, tell. You will be nice. You will love your job. You will love the people you work. It takes a very thoughtful and structured and intentional approach. Mm-hmm. It's very intentional. It's not something you will or direct or write in policy. And it has to start at the top. It has to start with the leadership, typically the CEO, but also the board has, and even in so many ways, more critical role. So I think about, you know, where does it really begin? And I start, you know, begin at the beginning with the board. When you are writing for your organization and capturing what is the mission of your organization, you know, to improve the lives of the people you serve, to bring them good health, to keep them healthy. What is your vision for that community? And what is it that you value in the community? So mission, vision, values. Mm-hmm. If we have leaders listening, they're gonna know those words. But we write a lot of values that we can talk about all these words or that we value. We value honesty. We value respect. We value excellence and high quality service. We value good stewardship. We say these things, we name them. That is where the board begins. Mm-hmm. But without defining and explaining what those values look like in concrete behaviors, people will not get it. And mm-hmm. that's why so many times mission, vision, value statements end up in a desk drawer. You wrote them, you feel good about them, you pull them out and say, see, we're supposed to be respectful. You didn't show up for work today and you didn't even call in. It says respect here. Well, oh, I didn't know that's what respect meant. So yes. You begin to start talking with your colleagues at all levels of the organization. And I found the most effective way to do that is to begin once you've established, you know, these are the things we value. We want to be an excellent or a great organization and we want to treat people right. To have those very deep, broad conversations at all levels of the organization about what does that mean to you and the individuals working in the organization, from the janitor to the physicians and everybody in between, tell us what that means in the way you behave. You know, we get upset and angry and we're in high stress situations, somebody's dying and we yell at people. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to. You know, that's not respectful. We're going to cool off. We're going to step back. We're going to do whatever. we tell people, you know, we've got meetings and our time is valuable and we have to start our meetings because I have to go to the next one and the next one and we need to be there on time, but you don't show up on time. Well, that delays the meeting. All kinds of very concrete examples can be written. And that process of helping of the employees writing what it means to them very, very quickly begins to help them relate, understand, and get it. So that's the first step of engaging people so that they own it. And there are many other parts and pieces to that, but I look at that as being absolutely critical because telling people versus having people understand it or learn it for themselves is very, very different.
Yes, yes, indeed.
And then kind of going along with that, I would just say the next piece of that is as leaders, the next most critical point is that you have to live it and it has to be authentic. You as CEO, as the leader, have to be the culture expert and you have to live it because if it's not authentic, people will see it. Like you got to know it. You've got to believe it. You've got to engage people. And you got to be authentic about it. You have to own it as a leader in order for the culture to be what you want it to be.
Yeah, yeah. It does seem kind of mysterious in a way to what do I do? Like some people intuitively might lead that way or know that they have a responsibility to do that. But probably that isn't clearly delineated on the to-do list or the job description of especially a frontline manager to elevate behaviors in alignment with the organization's values in the people that they lead.
Like those middle and senior managers often need a lot of supplemental training, education, understanding of tactical things that they can do and implement in their organization that will help them be effective. Clear job descriptions, leadership rounding, performance appraisals on a timely manner, check-ins, being visible. There are a number of very structured tactics. And it was so wonderful to see really good people with good intentions become enlightened. Like, oh my gosh, I wished I'd known these things. They make so much sense. They're not necessarily rocket science, but they are disciplines. They are disciplines. And so to do all the things I need to do in a day to perform my job well and do these tasks, and I will call them leadership tasks, like rounding on patients, checking in and do my follow-up when I find that things aren't working. Not making assumptions that people are trying to do bad things. I mean, the answers to simple problems can be really complex, and they don't necessarily mean that people are not well-intended or not doing their jobs. It's that if you're going to be a good leader, you've got to do your rounds. You've got to find out what the issues are, and you have to work on fixing them. And at the same time, you also have to give positive feedback. I mean, people need to hear that they're doing a good job. I want to hear from my CEO when I do something right, or my manager, or my supervisor, or my colleagues, or my friends. So how do we help build each other up and, you know, reinforcement? You're doing good things. You're doing positive things. Let's focus on the positive behaviors that we can reinforce instead of spending all of our time on what went wrong. So we talk about that, how you build the self-esteem of well-intended people. There it is. It's delivering service is all about the people. It's all about the people. And they've got to feel great and loved and know that they're doing good work. So accomplishing all of these things, leadership is heavy lifting. It's a lot of work. It's not just good people wanting to be in control. It's good people wanting to help everybody else be their best. And when we're all lifting, all boats rise with the tides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. getting into the boardroom and in the governance arena, anything you want to say about, you know, the board's role in culture and its impact on culture?
Yeah. Well, I think I'd start by saying being a board member and creating a strong board is a challenge. You know, when we look for board leaders and board membership, we look for an array of talented individuals. They're going to bring knowledge to help the CEO that gets hired. So we typically look for people with varied backgrounds, mm-hmm. maybe people in the ministry, if you're a religious affiliated organization, somebody in finance, that's always a given, that can help with financial oversight. Okay. Maybe, yeah, people in retail, so they know what's going on Main Street, what people are saying. So you're seeking out board members to volunteer, generally with no pay, mm-hmm. Volunteer their expertise to come and run this very difficult decision. They have to make policies, and healthcare is exceptionally complex.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So board members, as they come on, often need their own training about, you know, the organization. What is it supposed to look like? How is it supposed to operate? Rarely can they just step on a healthcare board and just say, I get it. It takes a while. It takes a while to kind of get the rhythm, the tempo, et cetera. I think really good board members that have experience understand a lot of leadership things. They bring those skills. They understand mission statements. They understand visions. They even understand values. But they may need a lot of help in getting grounded in an organization. Their job is to help the CEO without getting involved in, you know, there's a red line in the sand. We're here for policymaking. CEO's there to operationalize. But I did have an aha moment when we were just talking about this podcast and some of the questions that we maybe cover in our review of what is culture. And the aha moment was that we look for board members typically based on their professional experience, the expertise, you know, mm-hmm. as I just mentioned, some of the expertise, the school superintendent, the mayor for a political standpoint, you know, head of the Chamber of Commerce. Those are kinds of people that you might want to serve on your community board. But the aha moment was we might be beginning bring them on and help them learn and understand all the complexities of healthcare, all the acronyms we use, the crazy financing system, if they ever get that.
Oh, I know. It's like none other.
Right. But we rarely talk about or train for, or even we get time in a 3-year term of office, really focus in on performance measures, behavior expectations, and personality characteristics, strengths, and weaknesses with board members. We just assume whoever is in that board chair is going to know what leadership means and what those expectations are. And it sort of opened a thought in my mind that is there a place in all of this training and development when we're using people's time, very, you know, valuable time, because they have their own organizations to run. How do we infuse the idea of culture development, leadership relations in between and among, so that the board not only stays focused on the mission, vision, values, the high level outcomes that we expect, and learn how to work collaboratively with each other. We could do a lot more work, I think, in that area of learning to be our best selves at board meetings and learning to really maximize and make for a great board.
Very insightful. Yeah, that is an aha moment, is, you know, just like we talk about and train leaders in hiring, you know, when the board's adding a new board member, all of that same guidance of not just hiring for their skill set, but hiring for their behaviors as well. And will they collaborate well? Will they contribute well? All of those kind of things beyond, I guess, just their skill set and position in the community to represent that voice, but also to represent the culture and the behaviors and role model them that you want to see in the organization as well.
Yeah. And I think people get on boards they're asked to serve because they are good leaders. But it goes back to sort of that basic premise. Everybody comes well-intended and with good experience and all kinds of positive attributes. But how can we help them be their best selves and be their best collaborators and learn and understand in some maybe a little more meaningful, intentional way how they can interact in the best way and really bring out the best in one another? I mean, I've seen some board members that in some boards that are really engaged and love it, and they know their roles, and others that are disengaged. And we tend to lose the disengaged board members because they haven't figured something out, or we haven't figured something out when we're serving in a executive committee role or a chairmanship role. Of gee whiz, why do we lose that board member? They weren't engaged. Something's not right. So we have some work to do in that area.
Just like the concepts of employee engagement as well, and leadership and culture that we talk about in the entire organization, the board is similar in that way, that it needs leadership, it needs onboarding and development, it needs its behaviors are important there too, and continued growth. You know, you just said something that really sparked my brain too, is that when we come to a board position, like you're on a board, I'm on a board, we come there to serve. We're asked to volunteer. Our passions align. We're willing to give our time and energy and expertise to it. But do we ever go there thinking, this will help me grow as a human, as a leader, as a community member? And not that I'm going there to take something, I'm going there to give, but at the same time, can I grow? Like, is this an opportunity to grow? And if I grow as a board member, and every board member grows, just like we say with leaders or employees, if we're all going up, then collectively the entire organization is going up.
Well, this is where I could give another shout out to you and your services, Sue. And I will use the Dalrymple Village Board as an example. As we were going through a change in leadership with a very successful CEO of 25 years to a brand new leader, and the board was relatively new, a lot of new members. And so a lot of change going on, a lot of different faces, rewriting the strategic plan, rewriting the mission statement, vision, values, sort of affirming, are we, you know, we wanted to not lose the history and the depth that the previous CEO had spent so many years building, mm-hmm. and to bring that forward. But the process of creating the structure and owning it, and learning and growing what they could do within their committees, it was just phenomenal. And the level of engagement of the members of that board today is just superior. It's been such a thrill to see that grow because they own it. It's theirs. And so I think there's some great opportunity going forward, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
But you can never take that for granted because it's fragile and it can fall apart with a few leadership changes, with people don't understand the importance of the structure and the way we do things around here. Again, the culture, another way to describe the way people treat you or the way we do things around here. There is a way of doing things that if you take that for granted, the growth piece can fall apart and go backwards also. The fun thing about it is when you do get to the organization that is achieving at very high levels and has a lot of success and a lot of growth, then people want to come be on your board. They come forward. Like, I want to be a part of that. Everybody wants to be a part of a winning organization, right? I want to do that. I work for those people. I'm on their board. That's really exciting.
Yeah, it is. You know, we call it turning on that magnet. You know, you become a magnet for patients. You become a residents in your case, in your communities. You become a magnet for talent. And so board recruitment, it gets easier when you're thriving. And to your point is you can't take it for granted. It's like once you get people service and quality in your operations and your leadership high functioning, and now you're spending a lot of time on growth and, you know, that top level of high reliability and whatever. But those new people coming in, you might think that is an easier job to do, is to govern and lead a high functioning organization. But the answers aren't as obvious what to do next when it comes to, you know, like you've already tackled the easy answers or the most obvious answers. And it's like levels in a game, you know, I don't game, but people that game, you know, and you get those levels of the game is that when you get to those higher levels of the game, you think that, oh, it'll get easier, but no, it's intended to get harder.
Right.
So one of the questions that I was thinking about in advance that might be a great one for you, giving your years of executive and board experience and the idea of, you know, we joke about so much finance focus at board levels and getting beyond that, but it's a reality, right? We have to be good stewards of the resources. And when it comes to investing in board development, leadership development, things that might be deemed cultural improvements, improving workplace experience and culture and those kind of things, what would you say, just from your experience, your message about, is there a return on investment for that? Is it a good place to put our money? Why would we want to put our money? Some people think like it's really hard to follow that dollar trail that I spent this money on this board development and it's positively impacting the organization in a way that was worth that money. What's your gut on that, or thought and perceptions over the years of this work?
Well, I can give multitudes of examples, but I'll give the easiest, quickest one. And this is where one of the organizations where you and I work together, where the emergency department was failing pretty miserably. The patient satisfaction scores were in the fourth percentile, 0-4, bottom of the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
The community was dissatisfied. There was a lot of work to be done. So some changes needed to be made in the mix of who was working in that department because of, you know, attitudes and not being focused on the patient and bad behaviors. But for the most part, most of those people wanted desperately to be great, and they were embarrassed and they were ashamed, and nobody knew how to fix it. So when we began working in that space in the ED and really kind of bringing in all of the tactical strategies for how do you build culture, doing the patient rounding, doing the employee rounding, setting the performance expectations, helping people get to where they wanted to be. Within a year's time, that emergency department moved from the 0-4th percent to the 90th percentile, in patient satisfaction and won awards. People were coming, market share changed, community image change. Now, can I tell you exactly how many dollars that meant?
Right. That whole dollar trail, it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't do direct dollar, but I would say without fail that the investment in improving that culture and creating that leadership structure and support was priceless. It was priceless. And I think that possibility is present for any organization that chooses to really focus on making their culture a culture of excellence, where you are living, authentically living the mission and really focused on what's right for the patient, what's right for each other.
Yes. Yes. I love the proof that it's possible. I love having that concrete story of yours to say, like, we think sometimes we throw up our hands and we go, what can we really do? Is it possible? That's just very inspiring.
Wonderful.
And how good for the community, right? In the end, when your community has access to emergency care at that new level and that new level of trust, and what will be on the other side of the doors when they walk through them, and even those employees when they come to work, a whole different experience of coming to work than the ones they had before, it is transformational.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that, you know, if I could pick a number, you know, 85 to 90% of the very same people were present at the end of the year that were there at the beginning of the year, which says the vast majority of people want to be their best and leaders can help them be their very best. That's what's really exciting.
Yeah, that's beautiful. But I just want to just go back to is when you were at the fourth percentile and started to create this vision and this excitement around being better, that takes a lot of leadership to carry that message when you're looking at a four, when you want to be 90 plus, right? Like,
yeah,
to even get that bold as a leader to say, we're going to do it and just start.
Yeah. Well, I would say we didn't do it to be at the 90th percentile. We did it to not be at the fourth. We worked really hard at it, and the right people stepped up and the right people took ownership. But what an amazing award to a reward to, you know, be where we wanted to be. So
yeah,
it's all wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is fun work. And this has been a fun conversation. This has been a delightful conversation. I appreciate your time to share these insights with our audience to help along the way. And I appreciate you being a guest here today, Charisse. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Sue. I'm really delighted and feel very blessed to have you as a partner, a friend, and an inspiration for great leadership and organization. So thank you for all that you have done and continue to do with Capstone. It's wonderful, and it's been an honor and a pleasure to work with you.
Thanks, Charisse. And I look forward to more opportunities ahead. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for tuning in to Culture Change RX. If you found value in today's episode and you are a believer in fostering change in healthcare, join us in making a difference. Follow, rate, and review our podcast on your favorite platform. Share it with colleagues and your network. Together, we can make a lasting impact. Until next week, keep inspiring positive change.